Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Severe thunderstorms with hurricane-force winds rolled through Ohio Friday evening, leaving a path of destruction in their wakes.
This was an incredibly severe storm. It generated winds between 70 and 80 miles an hour across the entire state of Ohio, cutting a swath predominantly through the center of the state from the northwest to the southeast. These damaging winds, blowing tree limbs, blowing debris, large trees from off the right-of-way, from upside the hill, into the power lines, and this just creates a lot of trouble for us.
That's Tom Kirkpatrick of AEP Ohio. The trouble is that more than 447,000 customers are still without power as of late Sunday night. Are you one of those people without power, or are you one of the lucky ones who never lost power? Today on All Sides, we're going to talk about the aftermath and the recovery from those severe thunderstorms. We'll be taking your calls, and later in the hour, Tom Kirkpatrick from AEP will join us to provide an update on efforts to restore power. So listeners, how did these storms affect you, your family, your neighbors? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Go to the Facebook page if you like, and post your question or comment there. To start us off, we have WOSU's Tom Borgerding. He attended an AEP press conference this morning. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Good morning, Ann.
So what happened at the press conference today? What was the story out of that?
Well, the AEP has called in crews from several states, Mississippi, Alabama, Texas, and Oklahoma. They were staging this morning at the old Polaris Amphitheater. It's one of 12 operation centers that AEP has set up across the state, including three here in Franklin County. And basically what the line crews and the workers are doing is using this just as a base of operation where they can shift out shifts. And, you know, they're working 16-hour shifts right now. And then they also have people that just kind of drawing out where they're going to send the crews each day and what they're going to do. So they've got about 4,000 people now that are out and about trying to restore power.
You know, there's a lot of places across the country that have been hit by this. Did AEP have a hard time competing, do you know, for these workers?
Well, they didn't obviously take any crews from either West Virginia, Virginia, or states to the east, but mm-hmm. All the workers that are here today are from the south and southwest, Texas, Oklahoma, a big representation there. So, and a lot of these folks are AEP employees from those other states that they could get here quickly. They flew them in with some of their equipment, you know, over the weekend as quickly as they could. Because, you know, this storm, as you heard Kirkpatrick say, it blew through. I bet in our neighborhood it was 20 seconds. It was just a 20-second burst of wind that just took out the power lines. Big trees felled, and this is a common scene across the state now.
Fast and furious.
Where it was just an incredible wind. Very short straight line winds, very short duration. But boy, at the end, it took them out. Not only some of the distribution systems, according to Kirkpatrick, but even some transmission lines, which are the bigger high-power lines, even some of those were damaged.
And I noticed that it didn't really just knock down lines. It was knocking down the line poles that they were on, which is a huge problem.
Right. And that's what takes some of the time for the crews is to, you know, get the power supply to the distribution lines themselves, and especially if there's a transmission line involved. So there's one confirmed death in Ohio. It occurred in Muskingum County. A 70-year-old woman died when her barn collapsed. She had gone out to check her animals, according to Sheriff Matt Lutz. Nearly all of Perry County is without power still this morning. And as you know, as we've reported, Governor Kasich has declared a state of emergency. National Guard troops are actually coordinating with the utility this morning to identify people who are medically at risk because of the power outages. And so National Guard troops, a small number of them, are actually taking these lists from the utility companies and checking on these folks even door to door.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is WOSU's Tom Borgerding. He attended the press conference this morning with AEP. Coming up later, AEP's Vice President Tom Kirkpatrick, and also Ben Gelber is going to join us, NBC for meteorologist, to talk about the weather and maybe what's coming up this week as well, maybe even as soon as today. So we'd like to hear from you, see how the storm on Friday affected you. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Greg in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, but how are you?
Hot.
Yeah, you have no power.
No, we actually live out in Bexley, just right inside the edge, and we said it's amusing that you drive down one street and there's power, and the next street there isn't. We lost power probably about 4:30 Friday, and haven't seen a glimpse of it since. We spent the weekend kind of running around wherever we could. We said, pretty much we did the types of shopping that we'd never expect to do. We went and just played at a pet store. we went to Dick's Sporting Goods just to kind of walk around. We spent half the time yesterday at a Polaris Mall, finding out that only 50% of the mall at that time had power. Tonight we're fortunate enough to try and get into a hotel. We've found out that that has been a pretty significant thing. At least Friday, Saturday night, you had to go probably about 35 minutes outside of Columbus in order before you'd even find a hotel room. So last night, the only way to get cool basically was we camped out down in the downstairs, just in the living room, because that was the coolest place in the house. So we're making do, but we'd like to see some power soon, hopefully.
What about today? Now you're working?
Today, yeah, we're at work. Work, fortunately, does have power, so we said we're kind of joking around. We've got computers and cell phones and all sorts of stuff like that, hooked up so they can recharge. The Bexley Library has had power, so we've been there as far as checking internet, communicating with family out of state and stuff like that.
I know the Worthington Libraries, when they're open, and also the rec center, and this is probably true around the city, they're letting people come in and, charge up their computers and their phones and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we said it's kind of reminded us more of a college library than a public library, just because of how many people were hooked up into the walls. I mean, how many cords and different things. We said we'd sort of, you don't think about how many things you need to charge nowadays. I mean, people with phones, computers, iPads, iPods, however you're trying to spend
the flashlights.
Even the flashlights. Like, we were thinking about last night, we were going to blow up an air mattress, and then we were suddenly like, wait, does the air mattress pump use electricity or battery? Fortunately, it was battery, but...
Mm-hmm. Have you been through this before?
I have not. I grew up with... I have moved around, so I've always seemed to miss these things. My wife has grown up in New York, so they've had some of these winter power outages. She said she's never had one longer than 5 hours, and never one during the summer, so this is a little bit of a new experience. We're finding out that you can do a lot in the winter that you can't do in the summer. You can always put on more layers, cuddle together, stuff like that, whereas in the summer you don't want to touch each other, and there's only so much that you can do.
Well, especially this summer.
Yeah.
Greg, thanks for your call and good luck.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's one
Tom
of the,
Borgerding?
That's one of the things I asked about the power crews this morning, whether they face more hazards in cold, icy weather or in summer weather. And one of Kirkpatrick's comments was that these crews that they called in from Texas and Oklahoma, they're obviously used to extreme heat, and so they take care of themselves. But it is a different animal when you're working in 100 degree heat as opposed to maybe 5-10 degrees with the ice all over the place.
And still, they're working 16 hour shifts.
That's right.
If you want to call and share your story, how you're coping with the weather and whether or not your power's out, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And don't forget Facebook. If you want to tweet us, you can at Ann Fisher, WOSU. By 8 a.m. today, AEP Ohio had restored power to more than 245,000 of the 660,000 customers affected by the storms that moved through the state on Friday, and another 20,000 outaged by Sunday evening storms. And we may have another storm today.
Yeah, that storm last night, we were driving just the southeast side, and that was a pretty stout breeze that blew through there, too. It was kind of a deja vu experience.
Yeah, exactly. David in New Albany, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, David.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
A funny thing happened. A Friday evening when our power went out, my 14-year-old daughter asked me, well, what do we do without the internet? Our dad, what did you do when you didn't have an internet? And I said, well, we used to talk, we'd read, we'd watch, you know, we'd do stuff together as a family. And
play Parcheesi.
Exactly. So she was kind of taken aback by, you know, couldn't find anything to do. But the reason I'm calling is to inquire why the power company doesn't put a lot of the power lines underground like a lot of other states do and other countries do. We wouldn't have these recurring problems of power outages, whether it's due to ice storms or high winds, because we seem to go through these cycles every 2-3 years. We have power outages in central Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a friend who works for AEP. She says, well, it costs too much, and they don't want to pass the cost on the consumer, because consumers will complain. And I said, well, how much is it costing you to bring in all these extra crews in to repair the lines? I mean, there's got to be some reasonable approach to this.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom Borgerding, but there was more than just cost. Some people don't want those underground, you know, want the contraptions in their front yards, and that's pretty much where they have to be.
Well, that's part of it, but you can ask Kirkpatrick this question when he comes on. But the front-end capital cost, I think, are the biggest deterrent to the underground lines. The other thing is the underground lines don't assure that you always have power, because sometimes road crews will dig right through them. And, you know, there's that hazard, too. But I think your caller is absolutely correct. That the front-end cost, the capital cost up front, are the main deterrent as to why more utility lines are not underground.
Would you be willing to pay, David?
Excuse me?
Would you be willing to pay?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Okay.
I will ask Tom Kirkpatrick when he comes on the air in a few minutes.
Great. Thank
All
you.
Right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to join the conversation. It's pretty much an open forum today, but we're talking about the weather. It's a directed open forum. Joining me in the studio, Tom Borgerding. He was WOSU's Tom Borgerding. He was at an AEP press conference earlier today. Anything else, Tom?
Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, I'm always amazed during storms of the resourcefulness of people. Your one caller asked about the 14-year-old. What do we do without the internet? But, you know, it is, you know, just people getting by on a lot less, and sharing a lot. There's just a lot of resourcefulness in neighborhoods, pulling limbs off of rooftops and cars, things like that. I mean, we saw a lot of that over the weekend, you know, even in my neighborhood, where one person has a generator, and so they're pooling their food in the refrigerator. But there is a lot of resourcefulness there. One thing also that Kirkpatrick will probably address is that if you have a generator that's feeding back into the power system, those need to be turned off before the utility crews start working in your neighborhood, because they can administer an electric shock. So they're asking people with generators to call. If you go to the AEP website, they're asking people with generators to call and notify them so they can, you know, get to them before the crews try to restore the power. Because,
well, Tom, how about you?
We haven't had power since
Friday.
Yeah, Friday afternoon. And so we use wind-up radios, candles, and
and the Eton wind-up radio, that is one of our thank you gifts.
Absolutely. I've got 3 or 4 in the house. So.
Well, Tom Borgerding, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Very good, Ann. Thank you.
We're talking about the storm. We're talking about the aftermath of the storm coming up. There's possibly another pop-up storm in the offing. Joining us later, Ben Gelber, NBC4 meteorologist, and also Tom Kirkpatrick, Vice President of Distribution Operations, whatever that is, at AEP Ohio. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
He never spoke, but he touched the lives of many. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look back at the life of Galapagos icon Lonesome George. Plus, astronauts on the space station review their 6-month tour and the historic life and tragic death of Alan Turing. It's all on Science Friday from NPR.
Talk of the Nation will be this afternoon from 2 until 4 here on 89.7 NPR News. 76 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine this morning, partly cloudy in the afternoon. There is a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Also a heat advisory in effect again with a high of 92 today. Clouds for tonight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms popping up, a low of 68 degrees. Partly cloudy for tomorrow with a chance of showers and thunderstorms again and the high again near 90. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about the storm today, the aftermath of the storm. We want to hear from you. For those of you who are calling in, please be patient. Our screeners working hard to get to everybody, and we want to hear your stories and hear what you have to say, and maybe if you have any words of wisdom or optimism for those out there who maybe can't even get to a phone right now. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Anna, in Washington Courthouse, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah, what's going on?
Well, when it hit Friday, my boyfriend lives in Clintonville, and in a park that last hurricane that came through, he was out for 8 days. So when the prediction was 5 to 6 days, I took all his food out of his refrigerator and freezer and took it down to my house in near Bloomingburg, Washington Courthouse. And because we had power within about 3 or 4 hours. And then last night's storm that hit, it was pretty bad hail and wind. And I live in an old farmhouse with six huge maple trees around the house, and of course this morning there is a 50-foot limb resting on the top of my house and the power line, so the power is going to have to be cut for I don't know how long. The sheriff came by and told me I'm on a long waiting list. There's really bad damage down the street. The hail cut up the leaves, and he said it's like confetti all over the roofs, and the soybean fields are stripped of all their leaves, and it's really fun. It's fun to see. We're a lot better off than a lot of people, and I'm so sad to see all these beautiful trees everywhere.
I know.
Yeah, I've driven through Granville and Newark yesterday and in Columbus, and now in my area, it's just really sad.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, tell me, what are you doing in your community to keep people together? I mean, how are people taking care of each other?
Well, everybody who has a chainsaw in my area is, you know, coming together because the sheriff just looked disheartened. And there's a guy down the road who had to call him because there were trees down all around his house and he couldn't get out of his house. So luckily, I live in an area where people have chainsaws and tractors and backhoes, but there's so many other people who need more help than I do. So
it landed on your house. Is your house going to be okay to live in?
It'll be okay. It's gonna fall. It's a big limb. Right now, the top of it is resting on the broken pieces of gable on the attic and on the power line to the pole. And the phone line was also taken down, and it was draping across the street. And the county worker with his truck came by and saw it and couldn't do anything about it. So I took my telescoping pruner tree thing and I pulled the phone line down, so at least if a big truck or somebody came by, they wouldn't catch the line on their car. Mm-hmm. It's just a funny thing.
You lived in the city before, or have you always lived out kind of out in the rural area?
Yeah, I've kind of lived in the rural area. I mean, I had an apartment in Grandview for a while, but yeah, I live in the country.
Okay. It,
the last storm that came through blew my little chicken tractor across the yard. luckily, my chickens are okay.
Oh my gosh! Okay. Well, yeah, that is good news. Because they're like, you know, they're companionable.
Yeah, I have pet chickens.
I completely get it. You get it. They have personalities. Well, Anna, I want to get to some other people, but I thank
you for
calling and good luck.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
Bye
bye. Liz in Columbus. I'm sorry, Liz in Columbus. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann.
What's going on?
Well, I just had a pretty interesting experience with this storm. I actually live in Columbus, but I had just got to Cincinnati where my boyfriend lives when the storm hit, and we were moving into his apartment, and as soon as we put the last box down, the power went out. Mm. And then a couple hours later, my sister called me from Columbus and says, well, good thing your car wasn't parked here because there is a tree fallen into our driveway, and, you know, your car would have had a tree through it. And then about 5 minutes later, I talked to my mom in Waverly, Ohio, which is about 20 miles south of Chillicothe, and she had a branch, actually a tree, go through her window in her house. So it literally all happened at the same time. The same gust of wind all over the state of Ohio. It's just crazy that it literally seemed to be the same gust, and all this damage happened at one time from Cincinnati to Columbus to Waverly.
Well, I mean, it was moving across the state, but it was the same storm.
Yeah, it was just really crazy. We were lucky in Cincinnati. They have Duke Energy there, so we were only without power for about maybe 14 hours. But I'm on my way back to Columbus now, and I've heard about all the streets that are closed off and all the people without power. But I think, as far as I know, I do have power at my house, so I'm pretty thankful for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still streets that are blocked, but all things being equal, you can get around the expressways really easily, and I didn't have any problems. I think that's going to be the least of the problems in the long run. It's getting the power back on.
Yeah, I liked what the other guy was talking about. Having the power lines underground would be really beneficial. When I moved into Columbus 4 years ago, when that huge windstorm hit, and we were without power then for, you know, several days.
Yeah, that's Hurricane Ike.
Yeah, exactly. And that was it was literally the first day I moved into my apartment in Columbus. As soon as I put those first,
you got like a bad luck charm. No more moving to new apartments.
I'm just cursed.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Move anymore.
Just stay put. All right, Liz. Well, good luck, and hope all's well. But when you get home,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, take care. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us. We have an email from Jim. He says, I have an elderly mother in Mount Vernon who is picking up debris if brought to the curbside. Since it is a state of emergency, our homeowners on the hook for cost of hauling away debris. I know in Worthington, they're picking it up at the curb starting today. So I don't know about the rest of the cities and townships around Columbus. If anybody wants to let us know, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. From Sarah on Facebook, she says, I am doing better than most. Westerville Electric is the best. I was only out of power for 5 to 6 hours. Most of the trees in my neighborhood went down in the middle of our yards, missing everything. That probably helped a lot, Sarah. Shower by candlelight was nice. I visited my neighbors on their front porch. The last time we did that was Hurricane Ike in 2008. Yes, and indeed, it's very reminiscent of Hurricane Ike. Joining us now, NBC4 meteorologist Ben Gelber. Ben, welcome to the show. Welcome to the studio.
Good morning, Ann. How are you?
I'm good. The Liz was just saying it was so strange that everything seemed to hit right at the same time all the way across the state. It wasn't exactly that way, but it was pretty wide swath all at the same time.
Yeah, and what we saw was essentially a historic event, to some extent like the remnants of Ike, although a completely different nature of storm. These monster storm complexes are not all that uncommon coming out of the upper Midwest. We usually get kind of their last gasp. In this case, we caught it full bore. In other words, we caught the storm when it was peaking because it came through during peak heating on Friday. And also running into an extraordinarily hot and humid atmosphere, which also is extreme with temperatures near 100 degrees. Often those systems form in the Plain States, that were really the upper Mississippi Valley, but then our atmosphere is not quite as hot as unstable. So kind of a perfect storm scenario, like the remnants of Ike, where everything just kind of came together and it happened to be right over us in this case. But that bow or arc that we talked about on the air and showed many times on radar, it looks like a bow and arrow essentially on radar. The length was probably over 300 miles, so it effectively covered the entire state of Ohio. Hence it became a statewide windstorm.
It felt like, just from a viewer's point of view, it came up very suddenly. At one minute, I talked to people who said they were watching, Dr. Oz, and the next minute it was seek shelter immediately.
Right. Well, now again, there's a misperception that there that the warnings weren't there. Actually, they were there more than an hour in advance.
Mm-hmm.
The National Weather Service issued severe thunderstorm warnings, for example, for Franklin County and, of course, all the other counties in our area. But for Franklin County, before 4 o'clock, for the storm sitting around 5, and that was upon recognition of the echo. We have to keep several things in mind. Number one, the storm was moving at 60 to 70 miles per hour, the storm line. That's not a common situation. Usually they're moving at half that speed. You know, it kind of gets dark. You hear distant thunder. Maybe the wind picks up. That's maybe 95% of the time. This is, you know, an exceptional event. But so this storm complex was well-tracked, developing west of Chicago around lunchtime on Friday afternoon. And then it barreled east at just incredible speeds. It ultimately covered, 600 miles in about 10 hours, eventually going off the East Coast around midnight Friday night. But the National Weather Service did have thunderstorm warnings for all the counties at least an hour in advance, and in those warnings for winds in excess of 60 miles an hour. I think with thunderstorm warnings, though, it's tricky because no sirens are heard. Not everybody has a weather radio that's going to trigger. Most folks are away from the TV at that particular time of day. So I think there were some circumstances here that made it seem, in addition to the extremely rapid onset, that it came out of nowhere. But in fact, the storm did have ample warning time, lead time. In fact, tornado average lead time is only 10 or 15 minutes under best case scenario. So these warnings were out more than an hour in advance.
My guest is Ben Gelber, NBC4 meteorologist. Any questions or comments for Ben, give us a call, 614-292-8513. The mayor and the rest of his staff, I imagine, is in a press conference right now. We're hoping to hear from them later on in the hour and let you know about what to do with and answer some of those questions about what to do with debris and that sort of thing. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ben, what's coming up today in the weather?
Well, and there are two things, as I mentioned last night. Number one, after Friday storms, we added that much more humidity to the environment. We ironically coming off a near drought scenario, but that's sometimes how these things end, with explosive storms on an extremely hot day. Now the atmosphere has got more moisture to work with, so that increases the chance for isolated or pop-up storms, say, compared to the middle of last week when it was hot and dry. We also have the same boundary that became the focus for a lesser event yesterday that, interestingly, formed very close to where Friday's event developed. We had storms, in this case Sunday afternoon, around noontime, forming west of Chicago. So you have that uh-oh moment. But we didn't have the what we call the wind shear down here that would propel those storms at 60 or 70 miles an hour. So we had kind of a mini version. A smaller cluster was not statewide, but covered about a third of the state. And they did have some pop. We did have 50 to 60 and even locally 70 mile per hour winds Sunday during the newscast. Again, kind of shades of Friday. But again, it was several orders of magnitude below Friday's storm. What happened was once the boundary was laid out on Friday, essentially like a weak front surface boundary, like a highway, then the next round of storms tends to follow the same highway, because you have converging air, and that tends to create a favorable environment. Now, today, what we're lacking that we had Friday and Sunday is a stronger kicker or trigger, in other words, like an upper air disturbance that we can see right now. So the hope is that we would just deal with, for today and for red, white, and boom, more an isolated or widely scattered hit-and-miss garden variety summer thunderstorm, not that they can't have pop and obviously cloud-to-ground lightning, which you can have even in a very average storm, is dangerous for anybody, any of us outside, but a little less organization and a little less coverage. And then the second half of the week, the atmosphere should stabilize a little further, where we're just going to be under the hot dome. So I think we'll see less and less of what we've seen two of the past 3 days. But still, that said, we're going to have to watch out for a few segments of thunderstorms that could have damaging winds and hail just because of the high heat and humidity.
Joining us now, Tom Kirkpatrick. He's Vice President of Distribution Operations at AEP Ohio. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Good morning.
You know, we've had a couple people ask, why is it we have to live with these above-ground lines? They seem to be causing all the trouble. I'm sure you agree. But what is it about underground lines that we cannot get to?
First and foremost, it's the cost. Putting major systems underground like that would be really cost prohibitive. I think we'd have to have a mortgage just to pay for our electricity bill at that point in time. Put the main system underground is in the billions of dollars, and it's just not feasible financially. And our customers really effectively would be unable to pay for it.
Let's talk about the generator notification, because there's a lot of folks in my neighborhood who, yes, who have been using generators. What do you want people to do with those?
Well, certainly we want to make sure that you disconnect your service from our facilities if you do install a generator. It's very critical to the safety of our employees, because if you install a generator improperly, plug it into your house wiring, et cetera, it backfeeds onto our system, and we may have wires down. So it creates a hazard to the public, first and foremost, and secondly, to our employees who are working out there. So that is one of the things we try to check, and we do check when we're doing work on the lines. We listen for generators as well. But please, if you do have a generator out there, make sure you disconnect yourself, pull your main breaker or your main disconnect switch from the utility before you connect in, and then be very careful. If you can get a qualified electrician to do it, that's all the better.
Charlton in Delaware, you're on the air. You have a question for Tom Kirkpatrick. Hi, Charlton.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Sorry.
That's okay. You have a question for Tom Kirkpatrick of AEP?
Yes. What they call the mast is pulled off my house by a couple of feet, and the cable that supports it, the little ceramic thing, has broken. So basically the service line is laying in a tree. And I was told by a couple of people that I have to get that back up before AEP will turn my power back on. But a guy with a storm team just came through and said that that wasn't the case, that I could leave it the way it is, and they'd take care of it when they get here. So I'm just wondering which story is true.
Tom Kirkpatrick.
It's a little bit of both actually. That equipment that you're referring to, you broke up a little bit when you came in, but I think you're talking about your service mast, the pipe that leads from the top of your meter to a higher point in your house on which the attachment is made. That pipe in that facility is a homeowner's ownership, and the homeowner is responsible for repair of that. The service that comes into your house comes in from the outside and tags on what we call a drip loop there. Our folks in events like this will make an assessment whether or not it's safe to go ahead and restore service with that in a state of disrepair. It's really a local decision. But the fundamental direction to you is that you will have to get that repaired and get an electrician in to do that, or get someone qualified and capable to do that, to put that back up properly. The insulator thing you're talking about is commonly called a house knob or something like that. It needs to be reset into the wood of the house to hold our service in. So those are the pieces of that. So it's a little bit of both. Technically, like I said, those facilities are yours to repair.
Charlton, we're going to move on. Thanks for your call. Marlene in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Marlene.
Hi. I think my question is very similar to his, although I couldn't quite hear the beginning. But,
okay.
I have a line down in my backyard, and the box is pulled away from the house, and the line is draped over the garage. And I'm trying to figure out whether I'm supposed to try to report this to AEP or whether they will just discover it and fix it, you know, on their own. There's also a tree on the line.
Okay.
Yes, Marlene, it's similar to the answer I gave to the previous caller. The service box and the appurtenances, the equipment attached to that belong to you. And the fact that the box is pulled off the house and there's some damage there, that will be the customer's responsibility to fix. We do have a large number of people out assessing the downwire hazards. We've had over 9,000 downwire hazards noted to us in our call center, and we are walking the lines. Our damage assessment team is walking the lines to identify those and make them safe to the extent possible. Obviously, stay away from down power lines. Stay away from anything the down power lines are touching. But relative to the repair of your house, you're going to have to repair those facilities and get an electrician in to do that, or someone qualified to do so.
Okay, Marlene, thanks for your call and thanks for waiting. My guest, Tom Kirkpatrick, Vice President at AEP Ohio, and also with us, Ben Gelber, NBC4 meteorologist. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, what really happened with guns and agents on the Arizona border? A big investigative report looks again at Fast and Furious. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point is this afternoon, beginning at 1 here on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes, starting at 11 o'clock, hour 2 of All Sides, and a discussion of working through partisanship, a comedic look at American politics. Joining the show will be Meghan McCain, author and political commentator, and Michael Ian Black, author and comedian. Join us for that discussion from 11 till noon here on 89.7 NPR News. And this July 4th, you are invited to America's biggest birthday party. The evening will feature musical performances, a tribute to America's Olympic athletes, and an amazing fireworks display. It's a Capitol 4th Wednesday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. 76 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine this morning. There is a slight chance of a pop-up shower or thunderstorm this afternoon. Also a heat advisory in effect with highs near 92. Clouds tonight with still that chance of a shower or thunderstorm, a low of 68.
Support for 89.7 comes from OSU's John Glenn School of Public Affairs, offering continuing education and graduate degree programs designed for the working professional. More information at glenn.osu.edu.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the storm that hit Friday, the other one that hit Sunday. Joining us in the studio, Ben Gelber, NBC4 meteorologist. Ben, once again, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ann.
And also with us for just a few more minutes is Tom Kirkpatrick of AEP Ohio. AEP has restored power to more than 245,000 of the 660,000 affected by the catastrophic storms that moved through the state on Friday. Anything to add to that, Tom Kirkpatrick?
No. Okay. I think we gave him some updates today. We're moving forward. We've got a lot of people working, over 4,000 people working to help restore service in Ohio.
Okay. Susan in North Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Hi, Mr. Kirkpatrick. I'm glad to have the chance to talk to you. I've got ongoing problems we all have in our condo for like 20 years at the Landings Condominium. It's at the corner of River Road and Lane Avenue. And it seems we're the first to go down and the last to come up. And Ike, we were down for 21 days. I go home routinely. My clock's ticking because there was a power surge or something. And I've tried to address the issue when it's not in the middle of an emergency. In other words, right now you say that the Northwest Quadrant is going to be up by Saturday. I am positive it'll be another week to 10 days for our little condo. We have 165 condos. And there's got to be some ongoing problem, and I want to know how I can address that with AP, maybe not when you're in the middle of an emergency situation.
Oh, let's hear from Tom Kirkpatrick. Tom, I know that she is not the only one, Susan's not the only one who makes these assertions.
Yeah, well,
they always feel like the last.
Yeah, no, I feel like the last, and I, you know, I get folks from all over the city saying they're always the last, and I apologize for that. I'm not familiar with the situation during Hurricane Ike's situation. We are endeavoring and believe that we'll have certainly 95% of this done by Saturday and Sunday of this week here in Central Ohio, and we'll continue on for that. You know, there are some areas of the town, based upon the type of construction that's used, a lot of overhead, a lot of mature tall trees that are more susceptible to some of these momentary interruptions you speak of, and longer interruptions due to tree fall, et cetera. We have an aggressive tree trimming program that we've been on for the last 3 or 4 years to try to improve that. In fact, most of the damage we get from events like this are not resulting from trees that are in our maintained corridor, but really are trees that are outside of our maintained corridor. we typically only have a 10 or 20 foot easement or 10 or 15 foot easement for our facilities and have no rights to trim trees or remove trees outside of that. So these 40, 50 foot trees that tower over above our poles and can drop limbs and fall over in our lines are the biggest challenge for us during major events like this. As far as the day-to-day things that you're seeing, I would think maybe your condo homeowners association can get in touch with the representative, a customer service rep from AEP, and work towards a solution that makes sense for y'all.
Okay, so maybe someone that speaks for the whole complex then would be helpful.
That would be helpful. I mean, that's always good, and they'll be happy to do a little bit of research into the event and work with you collaboratively to find a better solution for you.
All right. Susan, good luck. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Tom Kirkpatrick, I know we have to let you go. I want to thank you for joining us today.
I'm glad to do it. Thank you very much.
Okay, Tom Kirkpatrick, he's Vice President, Distribution Operations at AEP Ohio. We're still looking for your calls, so hang in there with us. Still with us, Ben Gelber, NBC4 meteorologist. Ben, you mentioned earlier that this is historic, what happened on Friday. I wanted to get back to that a little bit and talk about how historic, sure. I mean, and why.
Yeah. And as we mentioned, while we do get these thunderstorm complexes through, usually we don't see this kind of intensity through the middle of Ohio. And we caught the brunt of this storm, not unlike we caught the brunt of Ike in 2008. So historic in the sense more location, not that we don't have these storms or squall lines pretty much every summer and sometimes multiple systems, but they are more typical Corn Belt, Western and Northern Corn Belt storms. Sometimes they form over the Great Lakes, and they are usually weakening by the time they come into Central Ohio. I've seen some really blast Indiana. Remember what happened in Indianapolis at the fairgrounds last year, the tragedy. That was a similar system where the deaths occurred before the storm even hit. It was all outflow. That was also in the 60 to 70 mile per hour range or higher, so very concentrated. Ike in 2008 is unprecedented. That was a tropical system that had pretty much weakened, but as it came up under the jet stream in Ohio, literally caught a second wind, and at that time that caused the storms and we had no rain with Ike, but caused winds of upwards of 80 miles an hour to mix down from, say, about 2 miles above the surface all the way down to the ground. So both of these events, remarkable and less than 4 years apart. And we also had a big windstorm in February 2009 that did considerable damage.
Diana and Galena, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Diana. I'm sorry, Diane.
That's fine. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
My question is about a weather event that happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The storm had passed, and I was just looked on the deck looking out the yard, and then all of a sudden there was just this huge amount of rain that just came down in like an area about the size of our living room, and it only lasted like 2 to 5 seconds, but it was just in that one area, and I just wondered what that phenomenon was.
Yeah, I think, thanks for your question, that probably was, in relation to the storm, of course, it wasn't all attached yesterday like the connected squall line on Friday. So you had some individual cells floating around and some that were trying to pop. So you could have either have caught a storm that, literally a developing or dying shower. Also, you just could have caught the basically downdraft, consider a storm exhaling, and it just shot out a little corridor of water in one spot as it moved on, or perhaps it had started to rain, but the wind had pushed the actual rain downstream, so to speak. So any of those are possibilities.
Oops, sorry, Diane. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Joining us now, Mike Collins. He's executive director of Red, White, and Boom. Big event, biggest one of the city for the city every year. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be back in. Thank you for allowing us to share information every year.
Yeah, what's going on with Red, White, and Boom in terms of the weather, in terms of the outages, anything in terms of the drought conditions or near drought conditions we've been in?
Well, in terms of the weather, I'm going to look to my right because that's where Ben's sitting, and he holds all the keys to that. And he's absolutely marvelous in terms of communication. We talk constantly, and So, you know, he'll tell you what the forecast is. That's far beyond my IQ and pay grade.
But what happens, I mean, what in the case of storms rolling through on Wednesday? I don't know if any are predicted at this point.
It's actually tomorrow, Tuesday.
Tuesday. That's right. It's tomorrow night.
I could tell you the fireworks rules. Okay, that is that if the winds are over 20 miles an hour and is there lightning, we don't fire. We actually can fire if there's rain, and those two conditions do not exist. we've been very fortunate for the past 31 years. This is the 32nd red, white, and boom. We have not had to delay the fireworks at any point. If something were to come up and they still could be shot, we would delay them. We do not have a makeup date because there's no way you're going to pull this many city resources together. So it's kind of, we got to get it done. But knock on wood, for what we've seen and what Ben has shared with us, we'll definitely get the show off. We would just hope that the day is as good as it can be for people. In terms of the event, real quickly, we're unbelievably fortunate. And I want you to know from a Red, White, and Boom point of view, we are very aware and sensitive to all the difficulties that people are having. We want to extend our sympathies to that. But by happenstance, the streets we are on have power. So we actually are up, running. I mean, Boom's ready to go. It's going to be as good or better than it's ever been, but that's only by happenstance and good fortune. I mean, I thank everybody that's through the city AEP, but the fact of the matter is we just happen to be on those streets. In terms of the dryness, because we actually, where the show is shot from, the vast, vast majority of it goes into the water. Unless the wind's going east to west instead of west to east, and it doesn't appear that's going to happen. The rest of it is concrete. There's one little section. And in terms of Vets Memorial, we actually wet the roof down before the shoot anyway. So the roof is wet. So we don't have fire worries, if you will, because of the location. Location's actually on purpose.
Coda, it looks like they're coming to a resolution today, hopefully. If they don't, any recommendations for patrons of Red, White,
the
and Boom?
The biggest recommendation is you're just going to have to start earlier. You know, they vote tonight. We'll know tonight. If they're back on, it's business as usual. If they're not, it really has come earlier. There are not alternatives. And if there were, the construction has taken away all the options for the alternatives. So that's really it. The one thing that would happen, because they stage and use High Street as its major artery, if they were not there, there would be much more traffic access to High Street, and particularly on the egress, particularly leaving as opposed to coming. That would be the one change. But right now, we want COTA to run. It represents 25, 26,000 riders, and so we're hopeful that everything comes together.
Melva in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Melva.
Hi, good morning, Ann. I didn't have a specific question for a guest. This may have been one of the second storm systems I've been a part of. I was in Memphis in 2003 or 4 and survived a straight-line winds of 110 to 120 miles per hour. And Memphis is known for its trees, a city of trees, and very huge trees just fell all over in the neighborhoods. And when it happened there, I could just see through my window in the living room, all of a sudden the trees that were in the horizon were gone. And I could see them falling as if, you know, the hand of God was lifting them out of the dirt and coming our way to our house. And I grabbed the kids and we went in the basement. But one eerie situation with that is that the expressways and the roadways were all littered with debris and with fallen trees. You couldn't get to a Kroger's or a Walmart to get supplies. And the Walmarts and the Kroger's and the other grocery stores and facilities couldn't get inventory in. So it was kind of scary when your food supply was running out. So luckily, some neighbors had, you know, generators or what have you. Got to meet your neighbors so you could cook or feed the people on your street because you couldn't get out even to get any supplies, and those who would carry them couldn't get them into the city for a few. And so the power was out for a couple of weeks. And so that was somewhat scary.
How about you today? Do you have power?
No, I do not.
Okay.
No, I do not.
Well, I hope you get it real soon. Hope you're one of the 95% at least.
Yes.
All right, Melva. Thanks for the call.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Ben, what is the predictions for tomorrow night for Columbus?
Well, as Mike and I have talked, there does not appear to be an organizing system that would trigger, you know, widespread storms, you know, identifiable like we had Friday and Sunday. What we call, you know, for an upper air disturbance or trigger. That said, though, because there's so much heat and humidity, and because we're still sitting along this stalled boundary that we don't really see physically, except maybe in the term in terms of maybe a row of cumulus clouds in the afternoon, there can be some pop-ups. And I think we just, it's better, of course, as meteorologists, we tend to prepare for the worst. You may have 95% of the area not get a drop of rain, but if that one cell crosses Franklin County at 4, 6, or 7 in the evening, you know, it's a problem because you have a lot of people outside, and lightning is often our number one concern. So I think that said, you know, and relative to what Mike said, you know, the show will go on, but we will all have to be cognizant of a stray thunderstorm. It's just the nature of the pattern that we're in.
Kathy in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hi, Ann.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Still no power.
Okay.
A lot of damage in our neighborhood. Excuse me. But it was really nice seeing all the neighbors pull together and helping each other. And like this morning, well, our freezer now is things are starting to defrost. And so I fired up the Weber and scrambled some eggs and did some sausage and some tater tots. And we had a, you know, it kind of feels like we're camping. But and then at night, we just bring in our garden solar lights and put them all around the house. So it's enough light that you can see going upstairs and you don't have to carry a flashlight. So, you know, you just think what you got to do.
Interesting. The garden solar lights. Good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But you're doing okay.
Yeah, we're doing good. Okay. And same thing as with showers. We still have hot water in our water tank because we're just taking tepid showers. So, you know, it's been okay.
All
and
right.
It's mainly just, you know, the neighbors pulling together and helping each other.
Well,
you know, it's nice.
Kathy, no, that's okay. I just wanted to thank you. We were running out of time. I wanted to thank you for your nice, positive call. Sorry we couldn't get to more calls this hour. We'll be talking about it for the rest of the week. So thanks again for your calls. I want to thank my guests, Ben Gelber, NBC4 meteorologist. Thanks for squeezing us in today, Ben. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Ann. And I hope everybody gets their power real soon.
And Mike Collins, Executive Director of Red, White, and Boom. Mike, thanks for joining us today and giving us the update.
Our pleasure. And for those of you that are having some difficult times, let's try to use tomorrow as a time you can get away. And hopefully we'll provide the type of entertainment that at least makes us all remember and recognize why we're really proud and delighted to be where we are.
All right. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.